Okay, Chevra, so let's just pick up from the last thing that we learned last week. If you remember, was the Gemara about shushi and shavtzeri. Basically, this is like wormwood and licorice. The Gemara says on the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis that you're not supposed to use it as tzach because since it smells bad, shavik lehu v'nafik. Since it smells bad, you might leave the sukkah. You might pick up and leave the sukkah. We commented that according to the Ritva, this halacha applies even to the walls of the sukkah, that you should not make the walls of the sukkah from something that's really smelly. And according to the Rambam includes this din with the halachos of schach, not of walls. And that seems to make sense just because the context in the Gemara is talking about the schach, not the what's it called, not the walls. Let's do just the next Gemara. Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, hani hizmi v'higi misach. Oh, we didn't wait for Tamar. I'm sorry. Is Tamar coming on tonight?
Yeah, I think she is.
I
It's
think
just,
so.
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Let's continue, but we'll go slowly. Because once you start already. Okay. I'm Rav Chanan bar Rava. Hani hizmi v'higi misachin behu. That the thorns and the thistles you can use as schach. Abaye says behizmi misachin behigi lo misachin. Abaye says that you could use hizmis and not higgies. My time I came in the natri tarfayu. Since the leaves fall off and the leaves are prickly, you might pick up and leave the sukkah. That's the basic halacha. You might pick up and leave the sukkah because the prickly leaves will fall down. So I looked in the Shulchan Aruch where these dinim are quoted in Siman Tafresh Chav Tes Se'if Yud Daled. In both cases of the smelly schach and the prickly schach, in both cases it says that it's l'chatla, meaning that we're nervous that this will happen. But b'di'evet, if you built such a sukkah, it's going to be kosher. That's the basic halacha. Not only is it going to be kosher b'di'evet, but some of the achronim say, Reb Yaakov Ettlinger in his Sefer Bikurei Yaakov says that since the concern is that you might pick up and leave the sukkah, not fulfill the mitzvah sukkah, so let's say a person has one sukkah with prickly thorns as the schach, and the other sukkah does not have prickly thorns as the schach. So there's no concern with having your prickly thorns one, because what's going to happen, right? The stuff will fall down and it might prickle you, so you might leave the sukkah. Big whoop. If I'll leave that sukkah, I have another sukkah, right? So the poskim basically take this in a very light sort of way. We're not that nervous about the prickly stuff and the smelly stuff. Some of the poskim say if a person can't smell, like for example, let's say you have COVID or whatever the reason, if you're unable to smell, that's actually an interesting shiloh, which I haven't seen the poskim deal with. There's a whole discussion about this in poskim, by the way. Someone can't smell. Do you make a bar mitzvah on Matzah Shabbos? No? It should not be such an uncommon shiloh today. I know a lot of people who lost their sense of smell. I know this is just a total tangent, but I'll say it anyway because today I did the Geiris for a woman. I was on the bez and we converted this young woman. So the woman's boyfriend, of course, comes to the Geiris and the mikveh woman is there. And like during the, when the woman is preparing herself, you know, before going into the mikveh, it's like we're chatting. And this guy, the boyfriend, says, you know, I just got up from Shiva. My father died of COVID. And the mikveh lady is like, that's really so interesting. You know, my mom died of COVID 2 weeks ago. And like, we're sitting there and like, oh my God. Like, this is like, again, I know people, just like this type of conversation, but the weird thing about it was they were able to comfort each other on some level. it was just like this totally, I was just talking to my kids about it. It was like this totally surreal experience. Like, whatever. Okay, so that's just, sometimes you just say tangents just because like you need to get stuff off of your chest and you need to say it to somebody. So, okay, let's go weiter. So basically we take this halacha of having smelly schach, and if a person can't smell, so the sukkah is not a problem. It's going to be okay. What's interesting is the Mishnah Berurah has a chiddush, where the Mishnah Berurah writes, if it's the type of smell that no one would stay there for, if it's like such a terrible smell that would bother everybody, so the Mishnah Berurah sounds like you're not even yotzei b'diavad. So that's like a big chiddush. In other words, it sounds like there's like two dinim here. There's the gezeira that you might pick up and leave. And then there's also something that mamish no one would stay there for. So in that situation, it's definitely a puzzle. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah Berurah. Yeah, Rachel?
I was just a bit surprised because that the Shulchan Aruch ruled that way, because the Gemara itself doesn't say like the Rabbanan then came and said that you should, if you have a smelly sukkah, then don't make a smelly sukkah. I'm saying like, how do they know that this is not something on Deraisa level? Like, yeah, it makes sense logically.
I think the Lashon of the Gemara is that since it smells bad, you'll pick up and leave. That sounds like it's Gzeirat Rabbanan, okay. Right? Where we're worried that the stuff will fall off, that the thorns will fall off. That really sounds like a Gzeirat Rabbanan as opposed to being a more fundamental issue. Okay, that's how I think they understand it. What's also interesting is the Mishnah Berurah writes that l'chatchila, you're allowed to build a sukkah with thorns as schach if it's not the type of thorns that are going to fall off. And you don't have to worry that they'll fall off with like a wind gust. Right? This halacha, again, like many areas of halacha, we deal with like a ruach metsuya. We deal with like a normal standard wind. And if it's like a wind gust, so that's something that we're not concerned with. Okay, so that is part one of the Gemara, which is basically something that we covered last week. Let's go weiter, fifth line. Amarav gidol amarav. Hai afkusa didikla misachachin buhu. How did you translate afkusa didikla?
Well, Dekel was a date palm, and now I'm forgetting afkusa, so I'm not really sure why I answered.
Afkusa didikla, right? It's a date palm. It means just like the stuff that first comes up by the date palm. In other words, it is like basically the lowest part of the trunk of a date palm, which is really, it's one thing, right? It's one base of a date palm. So you can use an afkusa de dikla eschach. Af agav de agidi, egad bide shamayim lo shmei eged. Even though it's all bound together, but Hashem bound it together. No? It's a date palm tree. Right? So God bound it together, and the gezeira that we have of a bundle being on top of the roof, etc., that gezeira does not apply when Hashem bound it together. Af agav dehadar agid b'hu, egad b'chad lo shmei eged. And if you bind it up together, you take a string or whatever and you tie it up. Remember, it's a date palm, right? It begins to separate. So you bind it up. Zuck the Gemara, you're binding up one thing. Iged chad, right? If there's one thing and you just bind it up, so iged b'chad lo shmei eged. Binding one thing is not halachically binding. Now, the Gemara, again, is using this for purposes of our Gezeira D'Rabbanan in Sukkah, the idea that Igei B'dei Shamayim is not Eged, and Igei B'chad, binding one thing together. Binding involves that you're combining two different things. If I'm binding one thing onto itself, that is not binding. Zakti Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Ravina Bar Sheva, Hani Dukri Dekani Misachachin Behu. Okay, what are Dukri Dekani?
Kani are reeds. Again, I'm only here halfway.
So kani are reeds. So dukri dakani are basically, again, the stump of reeds. I have no idea how reeds grow. Date palm trees I've seen in my life. I probably have seen reeds also. I just don't remember what they look like at the bottom. But dukri dakani you can use as schach. Af agav de agidi ninhu eged bidei shamayim lo shmei eged. Right, same thing. Even though it's bound, it was done by Hashem. Af agav de hada eged luhu ige bechad lo shmei eged. Even though you bind it, well, oh, welcome. We're thinking of delaying our beginning until you came, but then we realized we would just go very slowly at the beginning of the Gemara. So.
No, sorry, it's my bad. I thought it was 7:30. I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah, so not a problem. Last week I thought it was 7:30, and I texted everybody right beforehand. I was told it was 7:15. Okay, so basically, my understanding is that everyone enjoyed the Metropolitan Museum today. Is that correct? Okay, excellent.
Yes, very much so.
Baruch Hashem. So basically, the Gemara says that the bottom of date trees, the trunk of date trees, and the bottom of reeds is considered Eged Bidei Shamayim. Eged Bidei Shamayim meaning Hashem bound it together. So that's not called Eged. And it is one item fundamentally. And since it's fundamentally one item, even if you bind it together afterwards, that is called Eged Bechad, and Eged Bechad lo shmei Eged. Now, what I don't understand about this Gemara is once I have that second statement of Eged Bechad lo shmei Eged, once I'm saying that it's fundamentally one thing, right? Take the base of a date palm tree. It's one thing. It's beginning to separate, but it's not really broken apart into different things. It's fundamentally one thing. So once it's fundamentally one thing, why does the Gemara need the previous statement of Eged Bidei Shamayim, right? Of the fact that it's bound by Hashem. It's not done by humans. So therefore, Lo Shmei Eged. Once I have the second statement of Eged Bechad, the second statement that it is one item fundamentally, so then I should be able to say if it's I should say Eged Bechad Lo Shmei Eged. It doesn't matter that it's Bidei Shamayim and not Bidei Shamayim. So I've been bothered by this kasha for a few minutes, not that long. I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, unless the answer is that when I talk about the bottom of a date palm tree, the way they begin is they're pretty, you could begin to see them breaking apart, no? The bottom of a date palm tree is, the trunk is together, but you begin to see it breaking apart. I'm not sure what stage, how high up in the date palm tree I'm talking about. And at some point, one might have said that it's considered binding separate items together, if not for the fact that it's Eged Bidei Shamayim. Maybe it's only considered Chad because it's like a natural thing that God made, but something that separate, if it would be man-made, would not be considered a single item. I'm not sure. I really don't know why the Gemara needs both of these principles. It seems to me that the second principle of Eged Bechad, Lo Shmei Eged, would also suffice in the previous stage of the Gemara. We don't need to say Eged Bidei Shamayim. Again, this is just something I've been thinking about. I don't know. Any suggestions or?
I think maybe we misunderstood when we were reading, because I thought that the first of all, that these are the offshoots, and we actually found a cool picture that shows these things coming from close to the bottom that, yes, that do look like, I mean, Zoe had found the picture. I don't know if she still has it, like a bundle that's coming out. And I thought that that's what I was referring initially to say, again, Mesh Shamayim, whatever. That was, it's naturally from God coming in a bundle and Losh Me Eged, because it would look otherwise as if you gathered something at the bottom and it would look like a regular bundle. And then I thought that after this, they were talking about also binding it from the other side, but maybe I just misunderstood that.
I mean, I agree with that. In other words, it's like the second part of the Gemara is that I tie up the date palm tree, but I'm tying it up higher than it was beforehand.
Right.
What I don't understand, though, is if fundamentally this is one item and it's just beginning to break apart. So I should just say Eged Bechad. The fact that it's Eged Bidei Shamayim, does that matter? If I have something, again, I can't think of what it would be, but if I have a man-made thing that's one item and it's just broken into smaller pieces and then you tie it up, if I take a cleaver and I like bang the top of a piece of wood, then I tie it up, I would say Eged Bechad still, no?
But I thought that what makes it hot is that tying, the fact that it has kind of a root or whatever, like it, the nimsh will be like, if I just gathered a bunch of straws and tying them at the bottom, that would be an egged and that would not be okay. The only reason this is okay is because it just comes pre-tied if you want naturally.
Right. So I agree.
And then fine. So once we have that, but I just thought that the Bechad doesn't only applies to this, not as a general principle, maybe. The fact that you're tying this one that's already okay, that's why it's fine.
And this thing is already... Yeah, so again, I agree with everything you're saying. I just don't understand what would happen if I would skip the Bidei Shamayim part of the Gemara. Wouldn't the halacha still be the same, that it's Eged Bechad? That because it's a date palm tree and it's fundamentally one thing that's just beginning to branch out, it's still one thing. And the halacha is tying stuff together is only tying stuff together if it's more than one. But if it's one thing, so then that's not considered eged. That's what I thought.
What if the bottom binding, like from Shamayim, what if that fell off and you just had three separate palm fronds? Would you be able to tie those?
If the bottom falls off?
Yeah, so I find this. I find this lovely palm, I forget, offshoot or whatever it was. And it has, like, it's bundled at the bottom with these sort of, you know, branches coming out of it. It's great. I bring it home. By the time I get it home, the binding has fallen off, but I still want to tie the top together to, you know, not have it be all over the place. Is that permitted?
So I don't know if that would be permitted, because once the bottom falls off, now it's three things, right? And then I can't tie the three things together. Again, I'm not sure. I think we've spent enough time on this. Let's go on. I don't know. Tanginami Hachi, the Gemara has a braisa. It's probably like 12 lines on the top. Konim v'dukrinim misachachin behen, that you could use reeds and dukrinin are spades, which are really the same as reeds also. You can use reeds and spades as schach. The Gemara is konim shita. Of course, you could use reeds. Ema konim shel dukrinim. What it means is the stalks or the stems of this plant that will divide up into many different parts later on, but right now it still is okay. It's the same idea that we had beforehand. Because it's attached at the bottom, it's going to be kosher. Sounds good. Anyone have comments on this Gemara? Should we begin the next couple of lines? Okay. Zok the Gemara. V'amar Rav Chista, amar Ravina bar Sheila. Hani mararisa de agma Yotzei bahen yidei chobaso bepesach. You're yotzei the mitzvah of marar with mararisa da agma. By the way, in context of this Gemara, the only reason it's brought up is because we'll bring in the concept of azov, and azov involves bundling, right? Azov was like the hyssop that was used, let's say, in Mitzrayim to paint the doorpost, or the hyssop that's used by the Para Aduma process, right? I'm not sure, by the way, what hyssop is. I don't think I've ever seen it. But
we did a lot of research on this.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
So pretty. Please tell me, what is hyssop?
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, we found lots of Google images, and it's a kind of mint.
Really? I didn't get that far, Mom.
Yeah, this
you
was
put it in the WhatsApp chat.
This was a significant part of our chavruta or habura this week was hyssop. And the other thing we learned is that hyssop does have all kinds of fancy names. That was another thing that we discovered. Oh, the chat is disabled.
Comes up in our Gemara.
Yes. So that is true.
Greek hyssop and Roman hyssop.
Yes. Well, we didn't find Roman hyssop, but we did notice that hyssop did have come with a lot of different names. So
okay,
that was our experience this week.
So what exactly is it? You're saying it's like a fragrant type of grass?
It's a flower. It's a flower. And what we also noticed is that, so there was a whole discussion of the calyx, which is like the seed pod, and the seed pod, like basically you can see very clearly on hyssop, the ones that have flowered and the ones that are still just kind of like in the bud, that it's pretty obvious which those are. I'm going to try and send it on the WhatsApp.
That's going to come up later on in the Gemara in terms of what are the givolin and stuff. Okay. So maybe if you could find a picture to show us later, as it becomes more relevant for the Gemara. But the Gemara basically says that mararisa da agma, if it is the maror, we'll just translate that way, from the, and agam is...
We got swamp.
Swamp. The maror of a swamp, you fulfill the mitzvah with that. You fulfill the mitzvah on Pesach. Mesve, the Gemara asks, but ezov, v'lo ezov yavon, v'lo ezov kuchli, v'lo ezov midbari, v'lo ezov romi, v'lo ezov shigeshlo shem levai. The Gemara has a question, by ezov, which is used, let's say, by Para Aduma, this is a Mishnah in Para, so you could use plain ezov, you should not use ezov of Yavon, don't use Azov Kuchli. That means Azov, it says on the side of the Gemara, blue Azov. Unlike the other ones, which are Azov that's identified by its location, this one is identified by its color. Do not use Azov of the desert, or Azov from Rome, or Azov that has any modifier. V'chol Azov sheyesh lo shem levai. So the Gemara has a kasha. How am I allowed to use maror of the agam when I'm not supposed to use ezov that has any modifier? Zok the Gemara. Two answers. Amar Abaye, koshen ishtana shmo kodem matan Torah, uvasa Torah v'hikbida alav, biyadua shiyesh lo shem levai, v'hani lo nishtana shamayhu kodem matan Torah klal. So what's Abaye's answer? It depends on the name changed before Matan Torah. What does that mean?
Like that the Azov, when it was spoken of in the Torah, it was before there was this blue and desert Azov. So therefore it couldn't be included in the Azov that's in the Torah. But the name of Maror is all inclusive to include this.
And so Azov had modifiers before Matan Torah, or Mara had modifiers before Matan Torah?
Oh, I thought Azov. Oh, I said it the opposite. I'm sorry.
No, which one? No, I'm asking which way it is.
Oh, I thought we resolved it that no, this isn't a challenge, because the reason why those other Azov kinds can't work is because those were not valid
those names were post Mott Tantora, whereas the Maror one was at Mott Tantora. So therefore that mace fey is not really a challenge according to Abaye. Kol shenishtane shemo kodem Mott Tantora, like Maror.
Yes, so I thought it's the opposite way.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I thought what Rashi is saying is that the Azov, before Matan Torah, there were all of these names were available. And the Torah says, only use Azov, which means don't use blue Azov, don't use Greek Azov, because all of those names existed before Matan Torah. But Maror, the change of the name happened after Matan Torah. So when the Torah says Maror, it means all of these things are called Maror after Matan Torah, the modifier, the adjective developed. Now, that means that what the Gemara is saying is that the name of Azov Yavani and Azov Romi existed before Matan Torah, which to me is a little troubling. No? Again, I think I'm learning the Gemara the way Rashi said it, that all of these things had a modifier before Matan Torah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, use plain Azov. Don't use these razzle-dazzle Greek or Roman Azovs. But I don't understand this because... like to say that there's Roman Azov before Matan Torah, just like the timing doesn't match up. Yeah.
I think it's so anachronistic because maybe the name of it changed, just like we have modern conventional names for things, but we know they're ancient names as well. So now we call it Roman Azov. So even though there was no such thing as Rome, it was called something else, but we have a tradition that there was that.
I guess that's what you have to say. So and as we call it Roman Azov, they had a different modifier for that type of Azov, and that's what the Gemara means. But perhaps it's still a little unusual. That's fine. Rava Amar, Hani Mararisa Stoma Shmaihu, the Mararisa de Agma, the swamp Maror, is really plain Maror. V'hai de Kari Luhu Mararisa de Agma, Mishum de Mishtakach Ba'agma. It's only called Mararisa de Agma because it's found in the swamp. Who wants to explain this one? This is actually all very hard to understand as well. It's
The one that confused us is that if we're saying that it's only because of location, then what is the Azov Bamidbar? Like, why would you have Azov that's in the desert?
So that's a very problematic thing. I should have assigned this to you. If you look in the Rashash, in the back of the Gemara, the Rashash is sensitive to this issue. And the Rashash answer is something to the effect of Hai Dekari Luhu Mararisa Da Agma means that Rav Chista called it Mararisa Da Agma. It's not the official name. It's the term that Rav Chista used for it. Unlike the Azov Yevani, Azov Midbari, etc., which everyone calls it that, right? Hai Dekari Luhu. I think the diuk of the Rashash is that in Aramaic, kari means he called, as opposed to karu, which would be they called. Right? So he, Rav Chista, calls it Mararisa de Agma because it's found in the Agam, because it's found in the swamp. But that's just a Rav Chista thing. Sounds like a plan, Rachel?
It definitely makes sense what the Rashash says. I guess I didn't read into it. And I kind of just viewed it as the Roman and the blue and all those different types. Those are complete. Those are different like species, like subspecies. And for some reason, this one that grows in the swamp, it's the same like generic species and not its own subspecies. I don't know enough about plants and stuff to know whether that like factually lines up or anyway. And like the question.
Yeah, what you're saying is that it could be that the Azov of Yavan and the Azov of Rome are different species as opposed to the Azov and the Agma. It's this, as opposed to the Maror and the Agma, it's the same Maror, it just grows in a different place. It's like the Torah speaks about Arvei Nachal, right? That you should take Aravos. It doesn't mean they should take a revel stafka that grow at a river. No, it means that you should, there is one opinion in the tour that you dafka have to take, or that you should take a revel that grow at the river. That's not the accepted opinion. We take any areva. So it could be that's what's going on with Marisa de Agma. That's what you're suggesting. It could be. That could be the pshat. I don't know. Now, this Gemara, first let's talk about the Tosfos a second. The Tosfos Marisa de Agma. Did you do the Tosfos? You just jumped to the Magen Avraham. Okay, let's learn the Tosfos briefly together, and then we'll talk about the Magen Avraham. Marisa de Agma, Zok Tosfos. Pirish Bakunshis, it's Chazeres Sho Agam. Right? Rashi says it's Chazeres Sho Agam. Just a little bit of background. The Mishnah Psachim Daf Lamed Tes tells us that there are five species that you're Yotze the Mitzvah with. Chazeres, Olshin, Tamcha, Charchavina, and Marar. There are five species that you can use to fulfill the Mitzvah. Chazeres is Litugna, which means lettuce. So Rashi says, Marisa the Agma means the chazeres of an agam. It is the lettuce that grows in the swamp. Taisa says, Ve'en mashma came to perikol sho'a, damrinan ravina ashkechei l'rab acha brei d'rava, dava mechaza amarisa. Right? And the Gemara says that Ravina finds that Rav Acha tries to get Mararisa. That's what he tried to use for the Mara at the Seder. Amalei, my daitach. Imishin de Mariri, Tve, Vanans Nan, Chazeres. Alma ein ze Chazeres. Right? The Gemara says that Ravina tried to use Mararisa for Marar. And they ask him, why are you doing that? If it's because Mararisa is more bitter than the others, so that should not be the real factor, because Hanansnan Chazeres. The Mishnah says Chazeres first. The halacha is that the five species that are listed in the Mishnah are listed in an order of preference. Chazeres, Olshin, Tamcha, Charchavina, and Marar. The fact that Marar, number five, or Mararisa, number five, is the most bitter, isn't a reason to use that, because Chazeres comes first in the Mishnah. Chazeres is listed earlier in the Mishnah. That's what the Gemara says. So Ravina, why are you looking for Mararisa when Chazeres comes beforehand? Zok Tosfos, I see from that Gemara that Mararisa is different than Chazeres. Mararisa is not lettuce, right? Because Chazeres is first, and Chazeres is not Mararisa. Alma, Zoktaisis, Ein ze Chazeres, Ela min acherhu, Shishmo Mararisa. It's a different species. It's called Mararisa, and some of it grows in the swamp, and the Shoresh Shalo, its root is called a tia, etc., etc. That's all the exciting part, the end of the Tosfos. So basically, there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos over here. When Argamara says Mararisa de Agma, what's Argamara talking about? Rashi says we're talking about the lettuce that grows in the swamp. And Tosfos says we're not talking about the lettuce that grows in the swamp, right? We're not talking about Chazeres, which is species one in the list. According to Tosfos, we're talking about Marar, which is number five in the list. Now, the Ramah paskins in Siman Tuf Ayin Gimel that if you don't have any of the species of Marar, right, in Tuf Ayin Gimel, if, hey, the Ramah writes, im ein lo echad me eila hayirakos, if you don't have one of these species, yikach la'ana, O Sha'ar Yarek Mar. You should take La'ana, which we said last week is wormwood, right? Is that what I think La'ana we said is wormwood? You should take La'ana or any other bitter vegetable. That's the Psak of the Ramah. If you don't have one of these five things, take any bitter vegetable. That's what the Rambam says. Comes along Rabbi Abraham Gumbiner. He's called the Magen Avraham. He died in, actually pretty, dead in 1683. No? That's when the Magen Avraham died. So the Magen Avraham writes that the psak of the Ramah, that you can use any bitter thing as maror, is just wrong. And he has a few ideas to get at. Should we go through this Magen Avraham together? It's a little, Magen Avraham's are hard to read. There's like a bunch of abbreviations and stuff. And it's a challenge. Maybe we should learn through it together briefly. That's okay, Chavra? So let's go through this Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham, Tuf Ayin Gimel Sif Katin Tes Zayin. O Sha'ar Yerek Mar. Kosav HaShote Giborim. B'Zaloshon. The Shote Giborim is a commentary on the side of the Rif. The Shote Giborim writes, B'Gemara Muchaf She'eno Yotzei Rak Be'elu HaShnuyim B'Mishnah. The Shote Gibar has like a terse comment. He says that the Gemara says that you're not Yotze with any bitter herb. It has to only be those five things that are in the Mishnah. Chazeres, Oloshin, Tamcha, etc. Umashrikasav ha'ogr sheyikach la'ana. When the ogre says that you should take la'ana, wormwood, shehu mifaresh demarar, Hula Anna. Zok the Magen Avraham, that when the Sefer HaOgur, the Ogur is a German Rishon. The Ogur, actually, when the Ramah writes in his introduction to the Darkei Moshe, he says that the reason why he wrote a Sefer is because the Mechaber ignored a lot of the Sfarim, the Beis Yosef ignored a lot of the Sfarim that are used by the Jews in Germany and Poland, etc., as the basics of their halacha. And the book that he mentions is the Sefer HaOgur. So the Ogur says that you should use La'ana as marar. Zok the Shote Giborim, that's because the Ogur translates the word marar in the Mishnah as La'ana. Marar means wormwood. Ulafizeh, V'sha'ar yerek mar yochal belo bracha v'divrei harav tzarech iyan. Zok the Shote Giborim. The only reason why la'ana is good is because of the five species in the Mishnah, chazeres, olshin, tamcha, charchavina, and marar. That fifth species, that marar, means wormwood. And since marar means wormwood, that's why you yotze with it. Therefore, when the Ramah says, take any bitter vegetable, that's not correct, lahalacha. Because lahalacha, I should only use one of those five species. Venerally, zok the Magen Avraham, it seems to me, shekivein ha-emes b'kavanas ha-agor. Zok the Magen Avraham, that I think the Shulte Giborim got the right shot in the Ogur. Darei ha-Ogur kasev kein b'shem Maharil. The Ogur says this in the name of the Maharil. V'zeh loshon Maharil. Here's what the Maharil said. The Maharil is Reb Yaakov Molin. He's known as the father of Ashkenazi Minhagim. All the Minhagim of Ashkenaz, or the major source of Ashkenazi Minhagim, come from the Maharil. Someone who doesn't have latoga is, I think it's still in many languages. Latoga is lettuce. Does anyone know a language where latoga is lettuce? I think that they say that latoga is lettuce. So the Maharil writes in the tshuva, if you don't have lettuce, you don't have latoga, yesh omin da muktam b'mishnah muktam l'mitzvah. They say that the one that comes earlier in the Mishnah should have precedence for the mitzvah. V'shem ha'arba minim muzkarim bagos maimini b'lashen Ashkenaz. Bagos maimini tells you what the five species are in German. V'tashbeitz kasav likach vermot belaz. The Tashbeitz writes, take vermot, which I think means, I think Zoe asked, was it Zoe or Rachel? One of you asked
me. I asked, yeah. What is wood in Yiddish? Like, is this Yiddish? Or what is he, or it's German?
I think Russian Ashkenaz is German.
Mm, okay. We thought it was Yiddish, so.
Vermouth is like a...
It's a drink, yeah.
It's a drink, yeah.
But I was wondering if it was like...
Which has like a bitter... There is something bitter in vermouth.
I was wondering if it was what you would use to flavor vermouth. Like if there's, you know, because like sometimes when you make alcohol, you extract it, you make the extract from something else. I mean, like I was wondering if it was that.
Do they use it?
I thought it would be like in those barrels made of that wood.
No, but do they actually do this? I know absolutely nothing about vermouth. But do they actually do this? Anyone? Tamar, your husband might know this.
I did just look up the wormwood in German is Weilmede, so that is close.
It is close.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize there was an M in it.
So, but let's continue. Basically, so the Tashbeit says you should take Weilmede or Vermut b'Losh and Ashkenaz, Nahainu Mur de Masnisen. Right? When he says you should take wormwood, that's the Mur in the Mishnah. The Taima, Doha Ikoma de Mahada Amararisa. Right, basically, if you don't have lettuce, take mararisa, meaning to say, wormwood, since there was Ravina, who in the Gemara tried to dafka use wormwood, you should use that when you don't have the others. Because apparently, although in theory, Olshin and Tamcha should go beforehand. Olshin is assumed to be endives. That although endives should go beforehand, nonetheless, there's a reason to dafka try to use wormwood because there was Ravina in the Gemara who dafka tried to use wormwood. The Aguda Kasav likach meretich dahainu Tamcha. The Sefer Aguda says to take meretich. Meretich is horseradish. No? Meretich is horseradish, which is called tamcha. Okay, just take a very brief detour over here. The use of horseradish as a bitter herb on Passover is quite controversial. First of all, the name horseradish, how do we get the term horseradish in English? What's the etymology? So the funny thing is, there was a journal that YU came out. It was like a precursor for the Torah Umada journal. It was called the Gesher Journal. Alan Brill was the editor of it. It came out like in the 70s. So there's a fellow, Sylvan Schaefer, who wrote an article in that journal about the use of horseradish as maror. The term horseradish, funnily, comes because in German it's called Meretich, and someone wrote Mare, M-A-R-E. Hence it became horseradish, which is, right, Retich is radish. Our horseradish has nothing living or dead to do with a horse. Is that correct? Our horseradish has nothing to do with a horse. They would take meretich. Now, there are problems, halachically, of using horseradish as maror. I know that my father, Baruch Hashem, Ad HaYom HaZeh, does it. He'll eat like a whole chunk of the stuff and he'll cry for like an hour after. My sister and I used to think it was like the funniest part of the Seder, watching my father eat maror. But the Mishnah writes that you should not use the root as maror. The mara you should use are the stuff that comes above ground, not the root that's beneath ground. That's what the Mishnah says. The only part of the horseradish that's really used when those who use horseradish is the root. No? That whole big white chunk is a root. Now, in theory, you could have the small grass-like stuff, which is above ground, and maybe you could use that, although that itself will be debatable. You could search online. There's an article by Ari Zivotofsky from a few years ago in the OU magazine called The Jewish Action. He has an article also about using horseradish as mortar. There's another problem. There are different senses that our tongue can experience, no? There's sweet and sour and bitter and sharp, and they call it edamame or something. What's that fifth one? Right?
Umami. So,
what?
Umami.
Umami, thank you.
Edamame is like a kind of, yeah, it's a, yeah.
Okay, so there are five different, murr is supposed to be bitter. Horseradish is sharp, not bitter. Now, I don't know if that is a compelling argument, just because I don't know if the Chachamim distinguished between sharp and bitter. Although in Halacha, we have terms charif as opposed to mar. No? A davar charif in Yerideya is sharp. Right? It's different. It could be that they were aware of a difference between sharp and bitter. On a more fundamental level, horseradish is not native to the land of Israel. And at the time of the Mishnah, horse, if you look at this fellow, Yehuda Felix, he's like the scholar. He wrote the book, HaChai V'Atzomeach B'Mishnah. It's a really important book about like all the plants in the Mishnah. There was a German scholar before him. His name is escaping me now. But Felix argues that horseradish did not exist in the land of Israel in the time of the Mishnah. So murr can't be horseradish. Using murr as horseradish is based on this aguda who would take mer reitach. But it's very difficult. The pashtus is that mer reitach, the Magen Avraham is assuming that it is tamcha, which is number three in the Mishnah. But it's very hard to assume it's number three in the Mishnah because it wasn't in Eretz Yisrael at that time.
Is there any issue with combining the, like, okay.
So the here's two? The story. Years ago, I heard a Shabbos Haggadah drasha from one of the Rashi Yeshiva in the Mir. And he made what I thought of a pretty good argument. A lot of people try to put the horseradish and the lettuce together. But it's not pasha that works. Because if horseradish is not one of the minim, so then the tam of the horseradish will be mevatel the tam of the real murr, and you won't get the mitzvah at all. If you want to be yotzei the mitzvah the way your grandparents did it and use horseradish, so you should probably have horseradish separate and lettuce separate. To put them together is halachically very questionable. I try to do that at the Seder. I don't like eating the chunks of horseradish. Again, the Achrayim say you should grind the horseradish also. No, I'm going to grind it too long before the Seder because there'll be mefig tam. They quote that the Gra in the Sefer Maaseh Rav used to grind his horseradish at the Seder. It's like he's sitting there like grinding the horseradish. And if it was Erev Pesach, Shechalia, what was it? If the first night of... I think he would grind the horseradish at the Seder, grind the horseradish right beforehand and leave it in a sealed container the whole time. That's what the Gra did because he was worried about mefig tam. The Gra would eat horseradish, like I think most people used as murr, but the pashtus is you should not put them together because of the questions whether horseradish is actually the murr.
Was this not available in Eastern Europe? Like, were root vegetables just more readily available than lettuce type?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have lettuce.
So they really had no option.
They really had no options. I mean,
I'm pretty sure they had lettuce, Roman.
Where do they have lettuce?
In Eastern Europe. I mean, there's lettuce that comes in the spring. It's not really bitter. The ones we have, it's not bitter either. But
Poland in late March, it might not.
Again,
I grew up in a different country, but it's very close to Poland, and it definitely that's around the time of the year when the lettuce comes out, and all the markets are full of it.
So you're saying that there is lettuce in Eastern Europe. So there's another question about lettuce.
Whether maybe in the 1800s it was different, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be it was different in the 1800s, although I assume that if we have it today, they probably had it then. Well, if it's already coming out today in March, it was coming out in the 1800s in March as well.
Unless it was imported.
At some point, I don't think today it's in, I think.
No, meaning maybe it wasn't native to that land and was imported later. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, I'm really not a botanist. I totally don't know any of this, but at least in America, there was a time that people were very uncomfortable using romaine lettuce for murder. Today, we have romaine lettuce all the time. When I was a kid, romaine lettuce was like the Pesach specialty, and we used to spend like hours checking it for bugs. And like everyone was like so nervous about the bugs. And a lot of people preferred using horseradish because horseradish didn't have a bug issue. Now, again, there was a time that people were using romaine lettuce without any difficulty in America because they were still using DDT. And that would kill everything in sight. But I don't know. I don't know why they dafka used meir reitach. It could be it wasn't available. I'm not sure. But they used meir reitach, which the Magen Avraham is quoting, that he thinks that's tamcha. Why is that? Why did they use tamcha, which is number three? Vishema bishvil delo isbarer der ocean kerbal. Dibesidurim kasav likach kerbal latibol rishon mashma de eno yotze bo yedei chovas murar adkan lashem maharil. Olshin, which is number two on the list, is kerbal. And in the sidurim, by sidurim he means the haggadahs and the machzorim, they would use kerbal. I think kerbal, by the way, is it's like a cucumber of sorts. I think it's like a Kirby. Now, it doesn't make sense that it's mara, right? But it would say in the Sidurim that they should use that for Tibul Rishon, if you use that for Karpas. That makes a lot of sense. Zok the Magen Avraham b'shem the Maharil, that they're not sure what Olshin is. Delo isbarer de Olshin Kerbal. They're not sure the Olshin is Kerbal because Kerbal is used as the as the karpas, not as the murr. The aguda kasav gamkein de murr hu vert. The aguda also writes that murr is the la'ana, the wormwood. The adua de la'ana hu vermit in German. So murr is, right, the number five on the list is wormwood. Ubin minhage maharik kasa makam she'en latuga lochin la'ana shikorim vermita osha aradava shumar tashbeitz. In Cain, Svila, the marid the masnis and kolel l'sho'e ohayirakos hamarim. Okay, basically it goes like this. The Magen Avraham is commenting on the Ramah. The Ramah says if you don't have marid, take any bitter vegetable. The Magen Avraham says that if you look in the Svarim, if you look in the Agudah, and you look in the Maharil, they're assuming that you should take wormwood, but not because wormwood is any bitter vegetable, but because wormwood is dafka number five on the list. Wormwood is the murrah that's on the list. There are, however, some who say, like the Minhagim of the Maharak says, that if you don't have lettuce, you take la'ana or any bitter vegetable. That means that they hold that the murrah of our Mishnah is anything that's bitter. There is no reason why you can take any bitter vegetable unless you hold that the word maror means anything bitter. And that's what Rashi and Chumash writes. Ko eser mar nikra maror. Ava b'gemara lo mash mekein. V'gam besukka daf yud gimel isa. Da afilo marisa da agma en yotzim mitnei she yesh lo shem levai. Ditzar she yesh shemo maror belo shem levai. Okay, that's like the punchline of this Magen Avraham. What's the Magen Avraham saying? What's he proving from our Gemara? Zok the Magen Avraham, then our Gemara, it says you should not use Marisa the Agma. Don't use the Marar from the swamp, because as a Shem Levi, that means that you can't just take any bitter vegetable. There's specific things that you could take. Even if it is the right name, it's Marar, and that's the proper name of it. Nonetheless, don't use it if it has a modifier. Now, when Rashi in Chumash writes, the Gabbai Kavanos Rashi, who writes in Chumash that you could take any bitter vegetable as Marar, Nira Loimar Sharko Karoi Marar, Avomi Komakom, Ein Yotzim Ela Ba'osim, Shanikroim B'Shasma in Torah Marar, Lachain Ein Lavare Hasha'ar Yirakos. The Magen Avraham's conclusion is, do not make a bracha on any bitter thing, only one of the five things. It could be that wormwood is okay because wormwood is the translation of number five on the list. Number five on the list is marar, which equals vermuta, which equals la'ana, which is wormwood, and that's number five on the list. That's great. But if you don't have wormwood, don't just take any bitter vegetable and make a bracha on it, because it has to be a specific type of vegetable that's mentioned in our Gemara. So, yes, Tanya.
But the Maimra in our Gemara says you are Yotze Bahen, and the way the Magen Avraham is reading it is that you're not. So I'm just a little confused.
I thought the Gemara's maskana is...
Maimra of Rav Chista Maravina Bar Shila.
Well, the Gemara's conclusion is you're Yotze with Mararisa de Agma because it really is plain Marar. It's just since his stuff grew in the Agam, that's why it's called Mararisa de Agma. Anything that really would have a modifier would not be good. Mararisa de Agma happens not to have a real modifier.
Okay.
Right? It's just that his stuff grew in the Agam, or the idea that the name came after Matan Torah. But if it had a modifier at Matan Torah, certainly if it has a different name, you're not Yotze. The Magen Avraham is being medayik in our Gemara that you do not fulfill the mitzvah of marah with any bitter herb. You only fulfill the mitzvah of marah with one of those species. And the chiddush of our Gemara is that even if it has a modifier, you're not going to be yotzei. Say it happens for technical reasons, the Mararisa de Agma, you're right. For technical reasons, the Mararisa de Agma is not considered a modifier. But even if it has a modifier, you're not yotzei. So is there any way, Rachel, how are you?
Oh, I just had a question. According to Rashi on Chumash, who says that mar is like a general term for any bitter herb, how does he understand why the Mishnah would list five specific plants?
So I think what the Magen Avraham is saying, if I understand the Magen Avraham correctly, he's saying that Rashi says any bitter herb is called marar, but that doesn't mean that you could be yotze with any bitter herb. Rashi's job in the Torah is like a translation. So if you translate Chumash, the Torah says merim, which means any bitter herb is called marar. But the Chachamim, the Chazal, and the Mishnah in Psachim say it has to be one of those five species. Rashi al HaTorah, I think the Magen Avraham is saying, is not a halachic text. I think that's what this Magen Avraham is basically saying. So Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in his notes has a potential defense of Rashi, a potential defense of this Ramah based on the Rashi in our Gemara. If you remember, Rashi says that Mararisa de Agma means chazaras. It means the lettuce that grows in the Agam. Lettuce is unusual as marar. The Gemara already says that It's unusual because it has a sweet taste. If you would leave it in the ground long enough, it would taste bitter. But lettuce ostensibly is not particularly bitter, no? It's only called myrrh because later on it will get bitter. Meaning that Reb Shlomo Zalman tries to say there's like tzvei dinim. We could defend the position of using any bitter herb as myrrh because there are two, just hold on for 1 second. So ostensibly, what Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying is as follows. There are two types of myrrh, perhaps. There is sweet myrrh, and then there is bitter myrrh. Sweet myrrh has to be one of those specific species. When Rashi says lettuce, and we have a whole question, right? Lettuce is not bitter. Therefore, by lettuce, if there's a modifier, you're not yotze. Because only that specific one is the mitzvah. But when we have anything bitter, perhaps you are yotze. What Reb Shlomo Zalman is trying to do is to defend that psak of the Ramah based on this Rashi that Tosas rejects. Again, Rashi says that our Gemara is talking about lettuce, chazeres. And our Gemara says that if it's a real modifier, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. That's right. Because if it's sweet maror, you're not yotzei the mitzvah if it's a different species. A really bitter species would be okay. So the Magen Avraham's whole kasha against that Rashi al HaTorah, the Magen Avraham's kasha against Rashi al HaTorah from our Gemara, basically we could say that that kasha is answered according to Rashi on the Gemara. Does that point resonate, ladies? Okay, so that's what we wanted to say. Again, I really wanted to get a little further in the Gemara, but I think it was important to read the whole Magen Avraham. Any questions or comments? Yeah, hi, Tanya.
I just, the notion of the order of lists in the Mishnah, is that unique to this list of maror, or is that a general principle?
I mean, which other lists are there in Mishnayos that are relevant for mitzvos? I think by matzah, right, also we assume, Elu sheyotzei bahen, there's chitin, sa'orin, kusmin, right, shibola shual, etc. Ideally, matzah should be made from wheat. If you can't do wheat for whatever the reason, then you can move on to barley, right? All the chamishas mini dagan, by the way, are species of wheat and barley. It's also a question about whether you'll say the mitzvah of matzah with rye or with oats. Oats is another big question. Also, one of you who the Felix is telling us is that it could be that you're not yotzei with oats. Maybe oats was not in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Oats has a different Latin name than wheat. It has complete, like there are two names, right? There's the genus and the species in the Latin. There's like Oryza sativa, I think is rice, right? And whatever, oats is completely unrelated to wheat. But I think there also, we follow the order in the Mishnah. The order of the Mishnah is the preferred order fulfilling the mitzvah. What else, Chavra? Okay, yeah, hi.
So, Rachel. Yeah, similar type of question to that of Tanya's. I was wondering the response in the Gemara about not being able to use like modifier name species if they were named prior to Matan Torah. Do we see this concept in other places?
I don't know of. I don't know of it. I also don't know how we know this in our Gemara.
Yeah, like my first instinct when I read this is like, where did this come from? Like, I guess it's logical, but like, where did this come from?
Yeah. Again, I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. Hi, Kale.
Oh, I just wanted to make sure I understood what Shlomo Zalman. He was saying if you have a bitterer, more bitter lettuce or a more bitter other plant.
Well, anything that's really bitter is going to be a problem, is going to be okay for the mitzvah mara. That's the defense of the Ramah based on that Rashi al HaTorah. Our Gemara says even if it's a teeny bit different, even just as a modifier, it's no good. So the answer Rav Shlomo Zalman gives is our Gemara is not talking about bitter stuff. Our Gemara is talking about the beautiful, sweet-tasting lettuce / marar. But really, bitter stuff, you're yotzei the mitzvah anyway. That's Rav Shlomo Zalman's argument.
If it was a more bitter lettuce that has a modifier.
I think, by the way, Yehuda Felix argues that there is a certain type of like wild lettuce that grew in Eretz Yisrael that they still have in some desert parts of the country that's like extremely bitter. And maybe that's like the real marar. Or the most murray of murrers, and it's also not bitter when it's like a tiny baby. That becomes bitter much later on. Does our lettuce really get bitter later on if you leave it in the ground for a very long time? Has anyone tried this?
Does the lettuce? I've had bitter lettuce before. It's if it's like very green, not like the kind that Bodate. Like,
I mean, there are other species.
All the nutrients are blasted off, but
there are other species of lettuce. I think Tamar, your husband, once tried to convince me that arugula it would be a much better murr substitute. Again, I don't know if it's considered the latuga or the lettuce or the chazeres or whatever. Like, I don't know where you draw the line in species. This is like a big question in terms of like Hilchos Kalayim and stuff. Where do you draw the line between different species? Hard to know. How related? Something has to be related. A first cousin, a second cousin, like, we don't know. Okay, Chevra. Have a good evening. Kol tov.
Thanks, Rabbi Schwartz.
Thank you. Thank you.